It's November the 25th. We continue in Yechezkel in Perek Mem, chapter 40. And we are up to Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Last time I had intended to do more than to get through Tev Zion, which we didn't. So tonight we're going to try to make up for some lost time. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam
shehakol nivra. Amen.
Okay. So let's just recall where we are here. We've been discussing the eastern gate to come into the outer courtyard, the lower courtyard. What is that? Is that from the other side?
That was part of the paper that they copied from.
Oh, I see. Okay. So so this is from the eastern gate, which is down here on the bottom. Now, you can look really at any of the gates, because we're going to see in the Psukim that the northern gate and the southern gate are, did I do that backwards? The northern gate and the southern gate are identical to the eastern gate, with one exception, which we'll see, which is the amount of steps that you have here to go up. So we'll talk about that separately. So we discussed last time that the eastern gate has six ta'im, six chambers, three on each side. They are accessed from the middle here, from between the walls. As you're entering the gate, you go up the steps, and then there are entrances on either side through which you can enter these chambers. You can also continue on into the ulam. He translates ulam as hall. That there was a hall, and that's this part here, that juts into the courtyard. So the wall of the courtyard, which runs along the eastern side here, is interrupted by this. We're of course looking at from a bird's eye view. We're looking down at the entranceway. So there is this hall here that is after you get through the gate. Now the gate did not have any doors. I call it a gate. It's an entranceway. It didn't have any actual gates that close until you came to the hall. The hall, and I didn't make this clear last time, the hall had two sets of double gates. It had one right at the front of the hall, meaning on front, I mean from when you're coming from the outside, you had gates right here, and then again, gates at the end of the hall. So the hall really was an enclosed area. If you would close the gates, you would have an area in that hall which was closed. So that's called, that's the ulam, the hall. And it follows the entranceway. Okay, so we had discussed the dimensions of how wide everything is here and how long it is this way. We were talking about the dimensions of what they look like. So let's just recall some of the dimensions here so we can be clear about it. And that is that there were 10 amos. Let's start here. There were 15 amos when you first entered the entranceway and you got to the steps. Between the walls were 15 amos. That's how much space there was as you're heading up. 15 amos. Let me use a pointer easier this way. So there were 15 amos between the two walls as you're heading in. When you got to the outer wall, now you see this entranceway with all of these chambers juts out beyond the outer wall. This is the outer wall here and here, and this entranceway juts out beyond the outer wall. So when you've entered the entranceway and you've got 15 amos between the two walls of the entranceway, when you finally get to where the outer wall really is, which is up here, you end up losing 5 amos, 2.5 amos on either side. So you've gone from 15 amos wide down to 10 amos wide. And that's how far it is between that's the space in the outer wall, is 10 amos. When you continue on into the hall, so then the hall is 13 amos wide. You pick up another amma and a half on either side. So the space between the walls of the ulam, of the hall, was 2 amos narrower than the space between the two walls of the entranceway. So again, 15 amos wide, 10 amos wide, 13 amos wide. Now that's going to be significant because what we're going to show is the thickness of the wall of the chamber of the first Ta was 5 amos. 5 amos thick. So if you add, here you have 15 amos from wall to wall, add the thickness of each of the two walls, and you end up with 25 amos. 15 amos plus 5 plus 5. So if you would measure from the edge of the inner of this first chamber to the edge of this first chamber, you'd end up with 25 amos. Similarly, the ulam, which was 13 amos wide, its two walls were each 6 amos thick. Not 5 amos thick, but 6 amos thick. So if you would measure from the edge of the wall of the hall of the ulam to the other edge of the wall of the ulam, you'd end up again with 25 amos. 6 plus 13 plus 6 for a total of 25 amos. So the point that Yechezkel is going to make right now is that the thickness from the edge of this wall to the edge of this wall was identical to the thickness of the edge of this wall to the edge of this wall. As if you would draw an imaginary line, which you couldn't do, but if you would draw an imaginary line starting here, you'd walk along the outer wall of the ulam. If you could walk through this wall and continue, you'd end up exactly along the inner edge of this wall here. They were lined up perfectly. That's the point that the pasuk is going to make right now. A total of 25 amos across the top.
Okay. Where did you say the double door? You said there were double doors at the end?
There were double doors. There were gates. The gates were here. I'm not sure if they were on the inside of these. I'm not sure if it was here or here. It was somewhere in here.
All right.
There was a double gate. And then up here there was a double gate as well.
The other end of it.
Yeah. Making that an enclosed ulam. An enclosed hall. So we're here. There was no gate. As far as I know, there was no gate. You just walked in. But then, after you walked up the steps and you walked past the entranceway to the Tayim, then you came to a double gate, which was presumably open. So the Pasuk says in Yud Gimel 13, Vayamad es hashar, and he measured the gate, migag hata ligago, from the roof of the Ta, of the chamber, to its roof. So he's measuring that part I showed you. Rochav esrim v'chamesh amos. It was a width of 25 amos. Pesach neged pasach. And it was door facing door. It's two different statements. It was 25 amos from, as I said, from the edge of this wall to the edge of this wall. And the two doors were lined up. You could look directly from this chamber into that chamber. In fact, if there was nobody standing in the middle, you could look directly from this chamber, you could see all the way through that chamber. All the doors lined up between the chambers. Vayas es elim shishim ama, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, he made the elim. The elim, remember we said that there were pillars. The end of the ulam, the end of the hall, was the wall of the ulam ended. The wall of the ulam here ended, if you're walking west, from east to west, and you get to the end of the wall, and you're about to enter into the outer courtyard, the end of the wall was actually a large pillar that made up the outer edge of the wall.
These had two pillars.
Then. Two pillars, one on either side. Now these pillars were massive, if you think about it, because the pillars, ostensibly, were just as thick as the wall. The wall was 6 amos thick. So 6 amos is 9 to 12 feet. So this pillar was also 9 to 12 feet in, well, see, they draw it as an oval, not as a circle. So let's assume that it's an oval, but at its widest point, it's a between 9 and 12 foot wide pillar. So it's a very, very large pillar. The pillar is almost the wall itself. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. But it was separate from the wall, and as we're going to see, it was taller than the wall. So that's what it says here. How large was this pillar? And remember we said last time, the pillar is called an ale from the word What did we say last time? It means a tree. We said last time it comes from the word Elon. Elon, right. From the word Elon, which means tree. So
everything comes from Elon?
In this case, it does.
Okay.
In this case, it does. Usually it would not. Usually an alien would be rams. In this case, it means pillar, which comes from the word tree. So Vayaz is Elim Shishim Amah. He made the pillar 60 amos tall. So that's a very, very tall pillar as well. 60 amos is going to be between 90 and 120 feet tall. So it's a very, very tall pillar. So he made them that tall. Ve'al El HaChatzer Hashar Saviv Saviv. And two, the pillars of the courtyard, the gate around, which means that all the other pillars in the gates were also that tall, 60 amos. And there are, so far we know of six, because there's two in the east, two in the north, and two in the south. Each one is the same size, 60 amos tall. But how tall was the actual ulam? How tall were the walls, the gates of the ulam? So to that he says, Val Pinei Hashar Ha Ison, and on the face of the gate, the eastern gate, that's a funny word for east, Ha Ison, the eastern one. The word in Aramaic for to come or to enter is Asa. Aleph Saf Aleph. So since this apparently was the main gate that people would go through, therefore it's called the gate of entrance. Shar HaYisam, but it's referring to the eastern gate. So on the face of the eastern gate, Al Lifnei Ulam Hashar HaPnimi, on in front of the hall of the inner gate, meaning the hall going towards the inner gate, was Chamishim Amma, was 50 Amos. The gates were each 50 Amos tall. So the gates that I was talking about, the two double doors, the two double gates, were 50 amos tall. So they were shorter than the pillars. The pillars were 60 amos, the gates were 50 amos. Remember, we said, though, that the wall, the actual eastern wall, was not so tall. We said before that was only, I believe we said 10 amos, is that correct? What did we say before? It was not that tall of an eastern wall. We said he measured 1 mida. No, it was only 6 amos. Because he took his measuring rod and he measured the wall, and it was only 6 amos tall. And that, we said, was because the Kohen Gadol had to be able to see, not the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen, who was doing the Parah Aduma, was doing the Red Heifer, had to be able to see over the wall into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So even though the gates were very tall, huge, and the pillars were very tall, but the wall itself was not so tall. So obviously the gates would have to be open for him to be able to see all the way through.
Does he have a bird's eye view?
Well, picture yourself up on a mountain,
mm-hmm.
and there's an adjacent mountain, which is the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Over there. He would be able to look directly through. It wouldn't be a bird's eye view. From where he was standing, he'd be able to see on a line through to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that's the measurements of the gates, the height, and the height of the pillars. And finally, before we move on to something else, we have the windows. The chalonos atumos, and the windows that were atum. What does atum mean? Famous Hebrew word, no? Cheder. Right? What's the word for it? What's the word for the sealed rooms?
Don't they call it
a cheder atum?
Yeah.
You know what they call it? The sealed rooms that for gas warfare. I believe they call it a cheder atum, which means a sealed room. So chalonos atumos means a sealed window. Now, when we think of a sealed window, we think of energy-saving windows, right? Right, where it closes. That's not what it means over here. There was no glass in the window. Chalonos, we'll tell you what it means in a minute. Chalonos atumos, these sealed windows, el hatoim, to the chambers, ve'el elei heima lifnima lashar saviv saviv. And to, what's that? I know. And to their shoulders, on the inside of the gate around. V'chein lo'elamos v'chalonos saviv lichnima vel ayol timorim. And also to the elamos, to the shoulders and the windows, around to the inside, and to the pillar timorim, which means palms. So what does that mean? Okay, so
here's the picture of them.
Right. The windows were constructed in a funny way. The windows were constructed in a way where they became smaller as they moved inward. It was a very thick wall.
Like a peephole.
Well, yeah, but it got wider, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very thick wall, as we know already. The walls were either 5 amos thick or 6 amos thick. Most of the walls were 6 amos thick, except for the walls of the Ta'im, which were 5 amos thick. So this wall was 6 amos thick, and this wall was 6 amos thick. These walls were 5 amos thick. So so we have a very thick wall. We're talking about a wall that's around 10 feet. Thick. So if you have a window, you can bore a hole 10 feet through the stone. That's a pretty thick window. Now, normally, the way you'd make a window is the window is just as wide on the inside as it is on the outside, or even better, you would have it get wider as it gets closer to the inside, because since that's your source of light, so that will deflect the light in a way that it will light up the room better if the window gets wider as it gets further in. But here was the reverse. The windows were wide on the outside, and they got narrower as they moved in. So that you ended up with a smaller and smaller area if you were one of my children trying to crawl through the window. So as you'd start with a very large opening, but as you got closer and closer to the inside, it would get narrower and narrower.
Right.
To a very small opening. That's called a chalonos atumos.
I guess there's a big limud there.
That what?
That the Beit HaMikdash produces its own light for us.
Okay.
It doesn't need light from the outside. There's two things.
It doesn't need light from the outside. That's the reason why the windows were like that. So no one would suggest that we needed that the Beit HaMikdash needed the light. Hashem provided the light, did not need the windows to provide the light. And in addition, the other idea, which Rabbi Eisman writes, and I think if we would give ourselves some time, we would come up with this as well, that the light of the Beis HaMikdash is actually reflecting out. Just like normally, if you want the light to fill the room, you'll construct the window that will get wider as it comes in. Here it gets wider as it goes out to indicate that the light from the inside is actually shining forth to the outside. The reverse of what you would expect. Mm-hmm. So that is the idea of the windows. Now the truth is, though, if you think about it from a totally non-spiritual perspective, just think about it as a physical structure. What would windows like that be for? What would that be used for? A window that was that those dimensions that they were what? Well, to see who's coming, okay, good, right? You can get a better perspective. If you have a small hole, but the hole branches out in all directions, you can get a better, right? It's hard for them to see you, but you can see out very well. And, what else?
You
can't see in, it's easier to see out. It's also a good place to put a weapon. If you want to defend the wall, it's a good way to do it. Because you can direct an arrow in any direction because the walls, the opening widens as it moves out, but it's very hard for those shooting in to hit the mark because it's a very, very small opening. So as a purely militaristic? From a purely military strategy, I would imagine I've never researched this, but I imagine that that's a good way to build an area that you want to be able to defend.
So are the windows only in the first one?
Well, I'm going to show where the windows were. There were a lot of windows.
Did it say how high up?
It doesn't say how high up. It does not say how high up. The windows were now. I used it. We'll come back to it in a moment about a military defense in a moment. But let's just show you. It's a good point. Where were the windows? So the windows were on the shoulders of the opening of the Ta. What are the shoulders? The shoulders are. Here's your entrance to the first Ta. This white space here. The shoulders would be either side of them. When you have a door. So the shoulders are this side and this side. These are the shoulders. So there were windows, one on either side of the entrance to the Ta, on both sides, because there were time on both sides. So here and here, there were these windows. That's the first thing the Pasuk says, that there were these windows. There were these windows. It says there were windows in these ta'im. Vel eleihem. I'm going back to the beginning of the pasuk, the middle of the pasuk. Vel eleihem alifnima lashar saviv saviv, and to their shoulders, to the inside. Here, the inside means the inside of the entranceway. The inside is referring not to the inside here, but the inside is referring to here, in the middle of the entranceway. There were windows on the shoulders facing the inside. Right. Right. That's where they were. The chem lo elamos, and also for the halls, which means that the ulam also had windows. I imagine it means here, in these walls here, there are windows. Not clear exactly how many, or where they were in the walls, but in the ulam there were also these windows. The chalonos saviv lifnima. There were windows all around the inner part, meaning the inner the gateway. And then a separate point. The rest of this is a separate issue. Vel ayel timorim, and to the pillars, there was timorim. There were palms, meaning it was made up to look like a palm tree. The decor on the pillar was that of a palm tree.
How?
That's a separate issue, not about the windows. Let me just see one thing over here, if you don't mind. That was the palm. That's a separate point, not the same thing as what we were just talking about. Yeah. Okay. Now, so it's interesting. The windows were around this hall. They were around this hall. There were two here and two here. One here, you know, they were on either side of the entranceway. And then they were around this hall. Here, the windows, as we said, were facing, they were, instead of what you would have expected, which is that they would get wider as they got further into the Ta, because the Ta would seem to be the darker area, yet they got narrower as they went into the Ta. That was the reverse of what you'd expect. Here, I'm not sure which way they faced. Meaning, I would have thought that this is the darker area and this is the lighter area, because I believe this was roofed. So I'm not sure if it was roofed or not. But if it was roofed, I mean, we said before there was a gag, there was a roof, so it seems like it was roofed. So then the windows would open up. What you would have expected was they would open up as you got inside the hall, but instead they opened up as you went outside the hall. So the smaller side was on the inside, the wider side was on the outside. Reverse of what you'd expect. So it's a little bit difficult to understand, because the whole idea of not needing the light, that makes sense, because this area was dark. This area was dark, or should have been dark, and should have needed windows. And the windows that were there were the reverse of what you'd expect. This area, assuming it was roofed, was also dark. So again, the windows were there. You would have expected it to be there for light, but in fact, it wasn't there for light.
What is that word where you said roofed?
Roofed. Covered with a roof.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Right? So.
The chambers are roofed also.
What's that?
So each of the chambers, that's all roof also?
Yeah, I believe so.
So the further in you get, the darker it should be.
Right.
And the back two don't have windows or anything.
Well, the pasuk when it says that there were that they were all around, it seems that Rashi understands that there were windows here going towards the inner courtyard. And there were also windows here and here, here and here and here. Okay? So again, it's not clear, because it's not spelled out so well in the Pesukim. So how many windows were there? We know for a fact they were on the shoulders. That's these four. But we don't know exactly how many or exactly where they were, both in the Ulam and the rest of the Tayim. But one thing's for certain, the windows were not facing outside of the Beis HaMikdash, outside of the complex. They were facing in to the complex, but not out. So the whole idea of not needing the light makes a lot of sense. They were put in places where you would have, where it needed light. You would have expected there to be light, and instead there was no light. That's great. But then, but the other ideas we said about the light going forth to the rest of the world, that doesn't seem to hold true, because if that were true, the windows should be facing out of the Beis HaMikdash. But there were none facing out of the Beis HaMikdash. They were all facing within. Now, even the military idea that I brought up, that would make sense for the windows that flanked the Shire, that flanked the entranceway, because it would be like an ambush. If someone tried to force their entry this way, there would be these, we could call them guard posts, facing into the Shire. It would be like a machine gun nest that no one could get past, because there would be these windows there. But once you get to the Ulam, that idea falls away, because the windows of the Ulam were facing into the Chatzar, into the actual Beis HaMikdash. And if the whole idea is as a defense, you're defending the wrong place, the wrong way. So the only one of these three explanations that really fits is the one the Medrash says, which is that it's a Medrash Tanchuma, that the idea is to show that the light is not necessary. That's the only one that really fits. Now, you might say that, well, why did I bring up the whole thing about a military defense? I mean, this is not a military complex. But the truth is that the Beis HaMikdash is built and is used in a way that resembles a military complex. Not a fort per se, but as a way of protecting that which is special. Those of you who were there in the summer when we discussed the second Beis HaMikdash, there were places where the Kohanim and the Levim guarded all night. They stayed up all night and they guarded. And if they fell asleep on their watch, they had to pay for that. There was a consequence. So we discussed then that what are they doing there? Who are they guarding from? What are they doing? What are they guarding from? So they're guarding from thieves, and they're guarding from criminals, and they're guarding from invading armies. That's what they're doing. But it's the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem can't Hashem take care of himself? I mean, you know, what are they protecting exactly?
Protect somebody or something that you love.
Okay, so it is to resemble that of a king. A king has guards around the palace. And so this is to resemble a palace that you're guarding, even though, of course, the guards aren't necessary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can protect himself. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like us, that it's the reverse of a basar adam, of flesh and blood. The Gemara says about mezuzah that Hashem is not like a melech basar adam, is not like a flesh and blood king. A flesh and blood king stays on the inside and his guards protect him from the outside. Whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has us go to sleep at night and he protects us from the outside. He stands guard with the mezuzah. So it's the reverse of what you would expect. And so the Beis HaMikdash certainly did not need people to guard it. Nevertheless, the system was to give a sense of a of a human palace, of what would go on in a human palace. Because, as you said, that shows, I wouldn't use the word love, I would show it shows respect. It shows what we are, what we want to protect, what is important to us. Now, love is okay, love also works, but it shows what's important to us. You protect that which is important. You don't put in a safe deposit box something which is not important to you. You put in a safe deposit box something which is important to you. You don't, right? You ensure that which is important. You don't ensure things that are unimportant. So that was the idea of how there were guards around the Beis HaMikdash. It would not be a crazy idea over here that these windows would resemble these protective
armaments,
okay, to protect the fortress, to protect the Beis HaMikdash. Right. That wouldn't be such a crazy idea, not because it was actually needed, but it would give that impression of a place that we are trying to protect. But as I said, it doesn't really follow through when you get to the Ulam. The only one of these three ideas that fully follows through is the idea that to show the light was not needed, and that the light came from within, not from without.
And so would the windows be decorative? I mean, what's really the point, other than that one point? What's the point of having them?
I mean, the Medrash makes that point. So the Medrash, you know, that's authoritative.
Yeah,
right?
I understand. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that would be it.
Really. Well, that would be the main point. I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't come up with other ideas ourselves, but the Medrash is saying that reason. Mm-hmm. That's the reason the Medrash says. And it's brought in other places also. Rashi brings that measure in several places.
I think the first Beis HaMikdash had windows like that also, didn't it?
It could be it did.
I think I remember.
It could be it did. Yeah, it could be it did. Okay. So that is the description of the eastern entranceway, the eastern gateway. Now, remember that until now, Yechezkel has been standing outside the complex. He has not entered the complex yet. Yechezkel has been with the Malach out here, and the Malach is doing a bunch of measuring and showing him the chambers and the ulam, the hall. He's showing him everything over here, the height of everything, and he's measuring and showing. And Yechezkel is dutifully recording in his mind everything so that he can tell it to us, as we have it now in front of us. Now, he's going to take him, the Malach is going to take Yechezkel into the outer courtyard. Now, let's get the term straight. The outer courtyard is inside the wall. Right? This is the wall, and this is the outer courtyard. The reason why it's called the outer courtyard is because there's also an inner courtyard. So it's relative to the inner courtyard, you have the outer courtyard, the Chatzar HaChitzona. And this is the Chatzar HaPnimi, the inner courtyard. Let's get our bearings based on what we know from the second Beis HaMikdash. We know in the second Beis HaMikdash, you had the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You had, that's the Holy of Holies. You had the Kodesh, that's the Holy, which is also known as the Heichal. And then, thank you, very good, you have the picture there. And then there is the Ulam, which we've already used that word already. Ulam means hall, but I mean there was an Ulam in front of the Heichal, right? And then there were three Azaros. There was the Ezras Kohanim, that's where the big Mizbeach was. There was the Ezras Yisrael, which is a very small area. And then there was the Ezras Nashim, which, although we've mentioned many times, it didn't mean that only women were there. It means that was the place where women would also go. Since the women would not go to the Ezras Yisrael, they would only stay within the Ezras Nashim. If they wanted to bring a carbon, they would go in through a different gate to separate men and women. So that the Ezras Nashim was called the Ezras Nashim because that's where women would also go. And then, of course, you have the Chatzar, which is the courtyard outside of the whole complex.
What do you mean by they would also go? Also in relation to men?
It was a place where both men and women would be. Uh-huh. That's why it was called the Ezras Nashim.
Okay.
When there had to be both men and women there at the same time, they built the balcony, which the women would go up on the balcony and the men would be downstairs. That was during the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. But here we have similar things in the third base of Hamikdash. When we started, we showed this, but let's show this on the map now, because now we're going to be getting into these things. Here's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, same as in the second base of Hamikdash and the first base of Hamikdash. Here's the Heichal or the Kodesh, same. And here's where we get to things are a little bit different. This, I suppose, would be called, yeah, it says Ulam here. This would be the Ulam, which was, Ulam just means hall. So there were many Ulams. This was also an Ulam. But here you have the Ulam, which resembles the Ulam of the second Beis HaMikdash. And then, instead of having an Ezras Kohanim, which in the second Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to borrow your picture. Yeah, thank you. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Ezras Kohanim, here's your Kodesh, here's your Kodesh HaKadoshim, your Kodesh, your Ulam. The Ezras Kohanim surrounded the entire Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then came the Ezras Yisrael, and then the Ezras Nashim. Right? So, but here in the third Beis HaMikdash, I'm going to need that again in a moment, but here in the third Beis HaMikdash, you have the Ezras Kohanim is in front of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's here. It doesn't go around the whole thing. It's in front of it. This is it, including the big Mizmeach. This is equivalent to the Ezras Kohanim that there was in the... I think I'm making a mistake. This is equivalent... Now, that makes sense. This is equivalent to the Ezras Kohanim in the second Beis HaMikdash. I'm just trying to see if there's a differentiation between what was called the Ezras Yisrael and what is called the Ezras Nashim in the third Beis HaMikdash. In the third Beis HaMikdash, the Chatzar HaKitzon of the outer courtyard, which was all the way around, was apparently open to everyone. Open not only will be, I say was, he also writes was, will be open to everyone. Open to the men and the women. Where there doesn't seem to be a specific line between the two. We'll see as we move along if that's the case or not. What is also very interesting is that in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was also an outer courtyard, but not the same as this outer courtyard. There was a chatzer, there was a chatzer here, surrounding the entire complex, which was called the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount. Third Beis HaMikdash, there is no indication of any kind of chatzer like this.
This is the second edition?
This is the second one. Mm-hmm. Here's the blow-up of the actual complex, and then this is the complex up here plus the area around it. So we don't have all of the same places. Now that doesn't mean that there won't be any, but it's not in Yechezkel's description. As we don't know what will be out here in the third Beis HaMikdash. That's not clear. But Yechezkel's description, he begins from this gate, and then there is the Chatzer HaChitzona, the outer Chatzer, in contrast to the Chatzer HaPnimi, the inner Chatzer. Even though it's inside the outer wall. So now, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Vayevieni el haChatzer haChitzona. He brought me into the outer Chatzer. Vihine l'shachos v'ritzpa. And behold, I should say ritzfa. Some of you have it with a dot, with a pay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should be without a dot. It should be ritzfa. I'll tell you why in a moment. There were l'shachos. L'shachos means chambers. V'ritzfa. And a pavement, asui lechatzer saviv, that was made for the chatzer, around and around it, shloshim l'shachos el haritzefa, 30 chambers to the pavement. Now, in modern Hebrew, you know, of course, that modern Hebrew has many errors that are based on a misunderstanding of the words in Tanakh. When modern Hebrew was first conceived, it was based on Tanakh. It was based on Scripture. That's where they got the words from. And then, of course, it's developed like any other language, and you have all kinds of idioms and different types of expressions that have crept into the language. But much of it from English. But there are certain words that are not accurate. And the mistakes lead to people to believe certain things which aren't necessarily true. For instance, the most common mistake is the word Abba. What does Abba mean?
Father.
But that's not really accurate. The word Abba is an Aramaic word. What's the Hebrew word for father?
Av.
Av means father. Abba with an Aleph at the end, which is the word the Gemara uses, and that's Aramaic. And Abba with an Aleph at the end, the suffix Aleph is possessive in Aramaic. Abba means my father. It doesn't mean father, it means my father. Because that's the respectful way you speak to your father. You say, my father. You speak to him in third person. My father. And if you look in the Targum Unculus on the words in last week's parsha, where Yaakov says, Yakum Avi, my father should get up. It says in the Aramaic, you look in the Targum Unculus, it says Abba. The translation of Avi, my father, is Abba. Mm-hmm. That's the translation. That's an error in modern Hebrew today. So there are other words like that where there is an error in the Hebrew. One of the errors in modern Hebrew is the word ritzpah. What does the word ritzpah mean?
Floor.
Modern Hebrew, the word ritzpah means floor.
Probably because it comes from the word ratzuf.
Correct. Ratzuf means paved.
Does it mean like to follow one after another?
Well, ratzuf can also mean connected.
Oh.
Adjacent to.
Adjacent.
Right, ratzuf. So a pavement, when you have tiles that are lined up against each other, that's ratzuf. Right. The problem is this. There's a word in Yeshaya where the malach goes to the mizbeach. Yeshaya sees the malach go to the mizbeach. And he takes a ritzpah. Uviyado ritzpah. In his hand he's holding a ritzpah. B'mel kachayim, with tongues, me'al ha-mizbeach, from on top of the mizbeach. The angel took a ritzpah with tongues from upon the mizbeach. What is on top of the mizbeach that you have to take with tongues?
Coals.
Ritzpah means a coal. A hot burning coal is called a ritzpah. A pavement in Hebrew is actually a ritzifah, without the dot. Ritzifah means a pavement, from the word ratzuf.
Right.
Ritzpah means a coal. This is relevant in Megillas Esther, when it says, right in the beginning of Megillas Esther, it says, Al ritzfas bahat vashesh, the dar of Socharis. And it's describing the party of Achashverosh and the
how lavish
it was, right. So it says, Al ritzfas bahat vashesh, on a floor, on a pavement of bahat vashesh. Shesh is marble, bahat is another type of stone. It was on this pavement of bahat vashesh. There, a correct way to say it is ritzfas. Bahat Vashesh. And the Valkriya should be careful to say it with a fe. If he says Ritzpas Bahat Vashesh, Ritzpas actually means a coal, not a floor of Bahat Vashesh. Now it's a very subtle difference, and therefore if the Valkriya said it wrong, he doesn't necessarily have to be corrected. It's such a subtle difference, and most people aren't aware of the difference, and it's not, most people aren't careful with the difference. But nevertheless, there is that distinction. Here, where we're discussing a pavement, the correct version should be without the dot. It should be viritzfa, and that's what Rabbi Eisman writes as well. That the Menchas Shai, who is one of the most authoritative commentaries when it comes to this sort of thing, makes it clear there should not be a dagesh, there should not be a dot in the pay. It should be ritzafa. Curiously, it is not talking about the floor.
It's a balcony.
It's a balcony, right. It's a pavement, but the pavement is on top. That's what I keep saying. It doesn't really mean floor. It's not wrong to use the word ritzfa to mean floor, because it means pavement, and that's not incorrect.
Right.
But nevertheless, it doesn't have to mean floor. It just means pavement. And pavement could be above also. So the balcony goes like this. Do they have it here? He does not have it here. There was a balcony on the inside of the wall of the outer courtyard, the Chatzar HaChitzona, and the balcony ran along this area here. Right here there was a balcony. Jutting out from the wall. Jutting out from the wall there was a balcony. It stopped here, continued here. Stopped here, continued here. Wherever there was something jutting out from the wall, that would interrupt the balcony. Wherever there was nothing jutting out from the wall, you'd have the balcony. I don't know if there was a balcony on the western wall or not. Although I don't see why not, but I'm not sure there was. But there was a balcony. The second Beis HaMikdash had a balcony as well, which we just mentioned before, which was for the women doing the Simchas Beis HaShaleva during the great celebrations that happened during Sukkot. They would have, to separate the men and women, they would have this balcony.
Didn't the women come the rest of the year?
Yeah, but it wasn't necessary to have a balcony during the rest of the year because it wasn't a whole bunch of people. During Sukkot, everybody was there. There was a chiyuv to be all the regal, so all the men had to be there.
Right.
The only time there were more, the most people ever in the Beis HaMikdash was on Pesach.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because Pesach, or I should say it this way, the most people that were ever in Yerushalayim was on Pesach. Because on Pesach, everybody had to be there, not just men. Women had to be there as well. Anybody who was healthy enough to make the trip, and old enough to make the trip, had to come to Yerushalayim in order to have the Karban Pesach. So there on Pesach, everybody had to show up. Men, women, and older children. And if you bring your older children, what'd you do with your younger children? Right? So that there you always had that.
Amazing to think how many people fit into the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
It's incredible.
Right. Well, they didn't have to be all in the Beis HaMikdash at the same time.
Right.
But they all had to be in Yerushalayim. And there were a lot of people in the Beis HaMikdash at the same time because everybody had a Shechter Karban Pesach in the afternoon. I want to correct myself. There was one other time where there were even more people, and that was during Hakel. Mm-hmm. Once every 7 years, because there you had to bring your small children too. Everybody had to be there, men, women, and children.
Right.
So that's a special event once every 7 years. And that was Taka in the Beis HaMikdash. So that was really, you know. But during the others of the Shalosh Regalim, Shavuos and Sukkot, and for that, so during Shavuos and Sukkot, all the men had to be there. The women didn't have to come. But of course, most of the time, all the families went. You know, I'm sure the women didn't want to be without their husbands on Sukkot and Shavuos. So they would come along as well. So normally, you'd have everybody come. Now, not everybody can make the trip. And, you know, so the women didn't have to. But that was what was done on Shavuos and Sukkot. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, no one had to be there. There was no obligation for anybody to come to the Beis HaMikdash Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's not one of the Shalosh Regalim.
You always think about Yom Kippur.
Right.
There.
Right. And we always think about that because that's when we reenact what went on in the Beis HaMikdash. We do it not on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. We do it on Yom Kippur. That's when it's part of the Musaf service. So that's when we're reenacting it. So we think about being there on Yom Kippur. But there was really no obligation. No one had to come on Yom Kippur. But a lot of people did. Because who wouldn't want to be in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur to see the avoda, to see the red cord turn white, the whole thing. I mean, it was very special to be there. So a lot of people came on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah as well. A lot of people came because it's Rosh Hashanah and the shofar. To be there in the Beis HaMikdash would be very special. But one did not have to be there. One did not have to be there during that time. So on Sukkot, when you had the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, where there were so many people, they made the balcony. Because there, it wasn't just being in Yerushalayim, it was being in the Beis HaMikdash, to go see the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And a lot of women came as well. During the year, if a woman wanted to come to bring a karban, and sometimes women had to come to bring a karban, if a woman did an avera that required a karban, or if something happened to her that would warrant bringing a karban,
like
having a baby, right? So then women would come to the Beis HaMikdash. But it wasn't so crowded that would necessitate having a balcony. But nevertheless, there was a separate entrance for karbanos. I'm going to borrow this one more time. Thank you. where this was the Ezras Yisrael. So if a man was bringing a karban, he would come through the main area here. This is the Ezras Yisrael. He'd come through the main area and bring his karban over here. If a woman was bringing a karban, there was, I forget if it's this one or this one. One of these two entrances was the Shar Nashim.
the gate of the women. And instead of bringing their carbon up through here, which would already get into a crowded area where there were a lot of men, the woman would come here from the side and bring her carbon. I forget which one it is. There was one designated for women. But typically, coming into the Beis HaMikdash in this area was not very... It's a very, very, very large area. Like today at the Kosel, it's a very large area. You don't need to have... If you go up to the wall, you have a separation because of davening and because that's where people are. But in the larger area, unless it's a very festive time, you just don't have that many people there. It's not necessary to have a specific place for men or a specific place for women. So it's the same thing in the Beis HaMikdash at that time. So here, you have a balcony going around the outer courtyard. It does not tell us if this is going to be for women. We would surmise that it's going to be for women, because that's what it was in the second Beis HaMikdash, but it doesn't tell us. In addition, we know there's these 30 leshachos, these 30 chambers up there. Doesn't tell us what they're for, doesn't tell us where they are. Whereas the six ta'im, the chambers near the entranceways, we know where they were, three on this side, three on that side. Here we don't get any information. So, we don't know.
It's on that second level?
It's on the second level. There were these 30 chambers somewhere on the second level. Doesn't tell us much about it. Let's do a little bit further before we run out of time. Pasuk Yirches, verse 18. V'haritzefa el kesef ha-she'arim. The ritzefa, this balcony, was to the shoulders of the gate. Same word, shoulders, meaning this is the gate. The shoulders are here. These are the shoulders, jutting out. So the as I said before, the balcony did not go around the gate. It got interrupted by the gate. So it was on the shoulders of the gates, which means to the sides of the gates. Lu'umas orech ha-she'arim, corresponding to the length of the gates. Now the length here means the height. It corresponded to the height of the gates. How high was the gate? 50 amos. So the ritzafah, the balcony, corresponded to the height. It was 50 amos high. And that is haritzafah hatachtona. That means the bottom of the balcony. Meaning, it doesn't mean, Rashi makes it clear over here, and we don't have time now to get into it. Perhaps next time we'll lead off with this. Rashi shows how this word hatachtona does not mean the bottom balcony, which would imply that there are two balconies, one on top of the other. Rashi says that's not what it means. It means the underneath of the balcony. The balcony had thickness to it, of course. Right? Here's your balcony, and it's thick. So the balcony corresponded to the height of the gates, 50 amos. Well, was it the top that was 50 amos or the bottom that was 50 amos off the ground? Mm. So it's the bottom. What's the word? Haritzafah, hatachtona. The bottom of the balcony was 50 amos high, which means where you actually stood, will stand, I should say, is more than 50 amos high. But we don't know how high because we don't know how thick the ritzafah is. So we don't know how high it will be. The bottom corresponded to the gate. The bottom of the balcony. So next time we'll probably lead off with this. It's a textual thing. It's a grammatical thing with this hey at the word of the word hatachtona. But also interesting to note, we'll probably start off with that next time and then move on to Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19.